Listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Thursday, February 19th, 2026. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunath Chish, Awa, Toksig Nusum, Salama. Thank you for joining the conversation. You may also join us via our live stream on YouTube's on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. Today, UAS Spring Career Fair and Networking Dinner is happening next Wednesday, February 25th. We chat with Story Oates about the opportunity for the community to meet local and national employers. Tonight, wildlife biologist Tiana Lewis is giving a bear talk in partnership with the Public Library's Juno Reads program, which is focusing on Mary Roach's book, Fuzz. And we begin today with the Juno Community Foundation. Rachel Disney. Disney. What did I say?
That's
Disney.
The right name.
I know, but it was like Disney. I stumbled there. It was funny. Rachel Disney joins me now in the studio to talk scholarships, legacy giving, other grant, everything going on with the foundation. They moved offices, so that's kind of fun. But Gunath Chish, HaEID, thank you so much for joining us. Happy Thursday. Happy snow day. It kind of slowed me down.
Thanks, Boston. It's always a pleasure being here to talk to you. And yeah, the snow is unexpected and fun.
Yeah, Gunath Chish. Yeah, it's kind of like it's given me a little bit of a pause today. So I'm just as unexpected.
Yeah.
So we thought we were maybe done with it. I was feeling like, oh, maybe spring's around the corner.
Nope. Like not done with winter yet.
The sun was shining the other day. And then somebody yesterday was like, oh, it's going to snow tomorrow, like 4 inches. So I was like, wow. Yeah, kind of bad.
Yeah.
But spring is an interesting time because we start thinking about next year.
That's right. All of these
high school seniors going to be getting ready to graduate. And there's all these like really cool scholarships that may not even be entering their minds terms of possibilities.
Yeah, what's really fun, the Juno Community Foundation scholarships just opened. And I know a lot of scholarships have already closed because a lot of the students do the scholarship run in the fall. But we have scholarships opening now, quite a few. So there's still some available, and can't wait to see all of these applications come in. So
let's talk a little bit about some of these specific scholarships that are available.
Yeah.
I know that you have on your website, you have a whole list of them. And of course, you can go to junocf.org and go to the Grants and Scholarships tab, and it shows you everything that's current, available, all that kind of stuff. But let's highlight a few of these so people, you know, parents listening or students who might be listening could say, hey, that's a good one for my kiddo to apply for.
And I have my handy dandy list here.
Yeah.
So the first one is the Simon and Anna Kirk Memorial Scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
This one will go out to one boy and one girl, so we'll give out two of them. Between about $1,000 and $2,000.
Nice.
And it's open to graduating seniors, and it's also open to anybody who received their GED within either this year in 26 or last year in 25, too.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So it's not just age limited.
Correct. Yeah.
That's cool.
Some of these, some of them are, some of them aren't.
This one it would not be.
Right. Well, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. And then the Margaret Franz Brady, this one is fun because this is actually all ages.
Mm-hmm.
It's an art scholarship, and it's open to northern southeast, like Haines, Skagway, and Juneau.
Oh, cool.
And we give out multiple scholarships between like $500 and $1,500. And it's art-focused, so you will have work samples to submit, but like I know a lot of people who go to like the Sitka Fine Arts Camp will submit to get a scholarship to pay for some of the tuition for the Sitka Fine Arts Camp.
Oh, so it doesn't have to just be for college.
It can be for
other
like any
things.
Art program,
I see. Okay.
Camps, workshops, something like that.
Or vocational schools, things like that have to do with the arts.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the Simon and Anna Kirk one. Is there something specific about that people, what's the requirement there?
So what I will say, well, the requirement is basically, so all of our scholarships will require you to fill out the application.
Okay.
Which is, you know, your name, your school. So for the ones who are graduating high school, you will have to submit your transcript. Mm. But there's no GPA requirement. And then you'll have to submit a letter of reference. So most of these scholarships also require a letter of reference, which is not a family member, but it could be like your teacher, a counselor, a boss if you have a job, a volunteer coordinator, just somebody close to you who knows you well enough that can be a reference for you.
Absolutely.
And then also a personal essay and like a list of achievements. So if you've been volunteering, if you have a job, something significant that you've done, and then a personal essay that highlights your story, basically, and just telling the committee why they should give you the scholarship.
I see. Okay. Yeah. So these, some of them, like the Margaret Franz Brady, is specifically for arts, but some of these other ones are more general.
They're more general, and they can be, a lot of these are open for students who are going to college or vocational.
Okay.
Just pretty much any like post-secondary institution.
That's cool.
Yeah. Okay. And one that I really love, because I mentioned the GPA before, like there's not a GPA requirement for the Simon and Anna Kirk. Mm. And the one that I do love, the Bob and Darlene Studi Scholarship, actually requires a lower, a 3.5 or lower GPA.
Hey, that's me.
Yeah. So like the point is like even if there's not a GPA requirement, we know that a lot of students might self-select out because they're like, well, I don't have a 4.0 and there's going to be a bunch of 4.0 people applying
to
this.
Only those smarty pants people get the scholarships.
Right. And so like they may not even apply in the first place. So that's why I really love this one, because it's specifically for people. It's designed to like help students just like have a little bit of a leg up so that they can get past that hump into some post-secondary institution.
That's interesting. Okay, yeah. That's cool. And what's the amount on that one, is it range?
It goes a range from like 1,000 to 2,000, and it'll go out to two recipients.
Two recipients. Okay, cool. All right.
And then the next one, this is the biggie. The next one is a $10,000 scholarship.
Say what?
It's pretty awesome. The Alma Harris Scholarship, and it's open to graduating seniors for post-secondary education. So again, the requirements are that you fill out the application. We get the letter of reference, the personal essay, your achievements. So.
And that one looks like it's due in mid-April.
April 21st. So a lot of these are due April 14th. That one, the 10,000 one, is due April 21st.
Okay.
And then we have another one that's specific to Skagway that is due May 1st. So that's the Hather Family Scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only open to Skagway residents. Between $1,000 and $3,000 will be given out. And there are multiple awards that will go out. So it's not just one. And again, it's open to graduating seniors or past graduates of Skagway High School.
Oh, okay.
Who are attending post-secondary education.
That's really cool that it's specific for one town. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. And then the Alma Harris one, going back to that $10,000, that's for like 1 year? You get that for 1 year?
So you can get it, you can spread it out between your semesters if you want.
Okay,
so,
okay.
Like I know we had one recipient who basically split it between 2 years each semester. So it was like four installments.
I see. Right, right.
So we can do it that way.
That's a big help.
Like it is a huge help,
I mean, having put my daughter through college, I know that the costs aren't getting any cheaper.
No, they are not.
especially if you're, you know, heading down south somewhere and, you know, it's pretty, can be, get pretty pricey.
And like a lot of scholarships, they can go towards tuition or books or, and we send them directly to the school. I should say that too. They go directly to the school so they can help with whatever like payments or fees that you have.
You don't have to worry about managing that money yourself.
Exactly.
I remember when back in the day when I would get the Alaska State student loan, they just sent that money right to you.
Oh, like that's you trusting.
You just get that in your bank
account. I love that, actually.
As like a 19-year-old, and you're required, you know, and then it's like, do I buy this cool leather jacket or do I buy books?
That's so very tempting.
There were some funds that maybe didn't get used for the proper.
They probably changed the requirements.
I don't know. I'd be interested to know if they have. And I'm looking at one that says opening soon, the Francis Spenno Zeal. Is that how you say that?
Yes. And that one's not quite ready to be open yet. Francis Spenno Zeal. And it's going to be for Chatham School District residents.
Okay.
So Tenneke, Hoonah, I think there's a couple more schools in that too. And it will be, we're still working out the details in that one, but it will be opening up soon. So if you know anybody in the Chatham School District, tell them to keep their eyes open for that.
And then one more listed on the site here that says Friends of the Juno Pioneer Home Scholarship. Is that something that's still happening?
It is, but it's specific to, it's like kind of an internal one. So like if you're working at the Pioneer Home and you want to get training, then they'll come to us.
It's not an open application kind
right.
of thing.
Okay.
It's just one that you have listed here on the thing. All right, cool.
You're getting nosy, Boston.
Well, I'm on this website, junocf.org.
That's awesome. Go to our website.
Grants and Scholarships tab, which is – it also has all the other grants that don't have to do with scholarships. A lot of them you can see are currently closed, and that's just how it is. And then the different dates that they come up because they're – different things that happen throughout the year, right?
Yeah, so if people aren't aware of the Juno Community Foundation, we're a philanthropic organization, and we have these grant programs that open up throughout the year. So a lot of them are for nonprofits. We have these scholarships for students and individuals. Like right now, our Hope CBJ scholarship is open. That's for social service scholarship grants. It's our social service grant program. And we have other grant programs that we run throughout the year. So if you're a nonprofit or you have a big project coming up, go look at our website and see what funding opportunities there are because there's money out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the Juno Hope Endowment CBJ Social Service Grant process is now open.
Yeah, we just took letters of interest. So now that's
where you're at in that process. Yeah. And then is there anything that we should be looking forward to coming up in the summertime in terms of this? Like what other things should we be looking out for?
Yeah, I think that one of our scholarships is a Douglas Dornan, a scholar. I keep saying scholarships because that's what I have on my mind.
Yeah.
Another grant that we have coming up, I think in the end of spring, maybe summer, will be Douglas Dornan.
Okay.
Which will go out to nonprofits.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's.
I love giving out money.
You have one of the best jobs. I always thought, because I was in the process in the theater for so long, and it was always like looking for the money. And it's really nice to be on the other side and be like, because you used to work at the
Jazz and Classics,
a recipient of many of these awards, but now you're on this side.
Yep.
And does it just feel like, does it have a different satisfaction for you?
My favorite day of the week is when I get to print and mail checks. It's so fun mailing the checks and writing the letter. And then sometimes the people, the recipients will email us or send us a letter back saying thank you and telling us what they did with the money. And like if you've ever been a recipient of a scholarship or grant or any kind of funding, we do read your thank yous. We do look through your reports. We do look at the pictures and we absolutely love them. So don't think that they just get filed away. We absolutely look at them and love them.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I love that. Rachel Disney from the Juno Community Foundation. Get your scholarship applications
in.
They're open now.
Come on,
now.
Kids.
Come on. Parents, get on those kids to get those scholarships in. Get those letters, right? Those are important.
Yeah.
They're letters of recommendation, I guess.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Rachel, thanks so much.
Thank you.
For being here.
Yeah.
This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We're going to listen to this week's Our Living Lands from Native Voice One.
This is Our Living Lands, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Mesa Verde National Park in southwestern Colorado is increasingly featuring the voices of indigenous descendants from the area. Colorado Public Radio's Elaine Tassie has more.
Take a drive through sprawling Mesa Verde National Park near Durango in southwest Colorado, and if you download and play the audio loop tour offered by the National Park Service, you'll hear the voice of a direct descendant narrating it, 71-year-old TJ Otzi.
At one time, the Pueblo people were nomadic. They would find a good place with an abundance of deer and elk, or rich harvests of berries and piñon, or pine nuts. They would stay for a while.
She's talking about Mesa Verde, an hour from Durango off any main road, back into a land of ancestral Pueblo Indians who inhabited it from the years of about 550 until 1300. Centuries later, hundreds of architectural structures remain, pit houses, towers, kivas, and cliff dwellings, some only accessible by a 30-foot ladder. 500,000 people from around the world visit this place every year. TJ's tour offers details only a descendant can.
My name is Thelma Jean Atsi, TJ for short. I am Laguna Pueblo, a direct descendant of the people who used to live here. This is still a living place. We still make pilgrimages back to Mesa Verde to visit the ancestors and gather strength and resilience from them.
Besides narrating the tour, TJ also works in the gift shop. She says efforts to put voices of descendants in places where guests can hear them makes her proud.
That people are listening to it, that I've been able to contribute to something like this that is touching all people from all over the world. And they're hearing me, they see me, they hear my voice. Is that her? They see my name tag. Hey, that's TJ.
She created the new audio script around 2017.
It started out as a 3-4 hour interview with two former rangers here, and then little by little it kind of evolved into the Mesa Loop audio after revisions and editing. And
another example of how Mesa Verde is including voices of descendants is in the 17-minute film that plays every half hour in a small auditorium in the visitor center.
Homes were painted with images of the natural world. Some Pueblo people interpret these triangles as mountains. In places, you can see fingerprints pressed into mortar and handprints on walls, signs of those who built and lived in these homes.
We've all engaged with the space, and so a lot of our spirits remain.
Its director, Jennifer Boyd, who is not native, says they started making the film around the pandemic with $100,000 after winning a contract to produce it. The film started playing in 2023. She says a lot of the crew has ties to Mesa Verde.
Yes, we had a producer slash advisor, our narrator, our composer. We had a working group of about 7 people, and then we worked with the Parks tribal members.
She says descendant native groups had final script approval. In the past, the narrative of Mesa Verde focused more on the white archaeologists who studied it than on the people who had built it and actually lived there. For example, National Geographic put together a short film in the 60s, calling them Klansmen, making reference to Christopher Columbus, and showing images of white archaeologists.
When their work is finished, the site will serve as an alternate attraction for the swelling tide of thousands who visit Mesa Verde National Park each year. By then, modern man should know more about the Anasazi than those citizens of the cliffs knew about themselves.
The museum refresh has been in the planning stages since 2019. It will also feature input from Native voices. Ranger Dalton Doral, a park spokesperson, says it hasn't been completely updated since the 1920s.
And so in this redesign, we want the multiple perspectives, especially bringing in those indigenous communities are key.
Outdoor tours resume next spring, but the film can be seen all year long. At Mesa Verde, I'm Elaine Tassi, CPR News.
Tune in next week for more stories about how climate change affects tribal communities. I'm Antonia Gonzalez for Our Living Lands, a collaboration of Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, Native Public Media, and the Mountain West News Bureau.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Sounds wild. Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
On a warm summer night, a bear and her cub are running down the street in an Anchorage neighborhood. They've been causing a bit of trouble in past weeks, sneaking into yards and investigating trash cans and chicken coops. But they've just had a bad experience. They were drawn into a yard by the scent of chickens, but when the mother bear approached the chicken coop, she was zapped by an electric fence. The shock was a rude surprise, and she bolted with her startled cub at her heels. Bears hate getting shocked, and she and her cub are unlikely to return. In 2025, an increasing number of Anchorage, Eagle River, and Girdwood residents were raising poultry at home. However, people aren't the only ones with an interest in these backyard dwellers. Fish and Game received many reports of brown bears accessing or attempting to access chickens and other suburban livestock. Of the options available to help protect livestock, electric fences are one of the best. An electric fence can keep bears out of gardens or compost and away from buildings, chicken coops, and other animal enclosures. be sure that weeds and vegetation don't grow up and touch the fence. A fence tester is an easy way to check to be sure a fence is working properly. The Fish and Game website offers videos, advice, and tips on how to use an electric fence. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Emil Mackey at Country Financial, offering insurance for home, auto, and business, and life insurance to protect your family in case of death. Located in the Juno Nugget Mall. More information can be found online or by calling 907-500-7017. You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. You can also join us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. Juno Reads kicks off its first in a series of events tonight at the Valley Library. 600 copies of Mary Roach's book Fuzz are out there, I guess we could say, in the wild, in the wild community of Juno. They're being read, they're being passed along, they're being digested, and now tonight, wildlife biologist Tanya Lewis is talking bears. Tanya has extensive experience studying brown and black bear behavior in Gustavus and Glacier Bay. She'll be sharing her experience about bears and answering questions about cohabitating with such wildlife in Southeast Alaska. I'm joined in the studio now by Tanya Lewis, as well as Jen Gardner from the Juneau Public Library. How are you today, Tanya?
Doing great. Thank you for having me.
Excellent. Jen, welcome back.
Thank you.
Yeah, Gunnath Cheesh. So, Jen, this is a Juno Reads is a program of Juno Public Libraries, and this book, Fuzz, has been out there. You've got 600 copies floating around.
Yeah, almost 600, and they went fast.
Yeah.
We ran out of books within 2 weeks of advertising the program.
Wow.
And we are encouraging people, if you have finished your book and you want to pass it along to somebody else, just bring it back to any Juno Public Library location so we can hand that out to somebody else. But yeah, lots of people are reading, lots of enthusiasm. It's been great to talk with people across the desk at the library who are excited and have their own wildlife stories. And we're just really excited to kick off the first of our series of events with Tanya.
Yeah, so this is like going to be a bunch of events. So this one's happening tonight at 6 o'clock. So if you're listening to the re-air tonight of Juno Afternoon, you've missed it. Is it going to be recorded or
we're not recording. This is
To be there or lose out. Yeah, okay. And then so this is the first one. And then do you want to tell us a little bit about what's coming up?
Yeah, we have a few upcoming events. So the next one is an Animal Encounters open mic at UAS. That's going to be on Monday, February 23rd at 5:30. That one's open to the public. So students, members of the public, feel free to come and either share something, a story, a poem, a song that is wildlife themed, or just come and listen. So that should be a fun one at UAS.
And that's next Monday.
That's correct. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then in March, we have the Trailblazers Hike and Book Discussion with Juno Parks and Rec.
Right.
So that's going to be on the 21st. It's a Saturday at Fish Creek. So you'll have an opportunity to discuss the book with library staff and also go for a hike with park staff. So it's a pretty fun way to have a book discussion and move around. We've done that in the past with other books. It's a lot of fun. And then we will be doing a free movie screening at Gold Town Theater. It's a movie called Roar from the 1980s, where quite a few members of the cast and crew were injured filming with untrained lions.
Oh.
So we thought that would be a good film to talk about some of the pitfalls of getting too close with wildlife and a film that came out of that. And then in April, we are going to have artist Kathy Hawker do a workshop for teens and adults. It's going to be animal wanted posters. So it'll be portraits of animals with kind of a fun twist. And that is going to be pretty limited in terms of registration, just 15 people. So we haven't opened it up yet, but it will be coming out soon. And you can find all of these events on our Facebook page as well as juno.org/library and take a look at our calendar.
Yeah, the calendar's great. There's so many good events happening at the library. That's the best place to follow it or hop on and join the Facebook.
Exactly.
Absolutely. All right, Tanya Lewis, lions, tigers, and bears, oh my. So you're talking about bears tonight. You have been a wildlife biologist. For how long have you been a wildlife biologist?
I guess since 1999.
1999. Yes. What got you into that?
Well, I always loved animals, and when I was in fifth grade, I learned about the word zoology.
Oh,
and
yeah, okay.
And I was like, I want to be one of those. So I, you know, took all the advanced math and science in high school and went to college. Undergrad took me 11 years. I kept kind of finding other things to do and coming back to it, but I did graduate from UAS with a marine biology degree.
Okay.
And started work with marine mammals.
Oh, wow.
And then in 2001, I started working with bears.
And what was the human switch? Bear. How did that happen for you?
It was mostly opportunity.
Okay.
The job presented itself.
Yeah.
And so I started doing bear research, and that led to writing the bear management plan for Glacier Bay National Park, which led to my master's degree with some more bear research.
Wow.
And that led me to sort of the realm of terrestrial wildlife biology, which includes nesting seabirds, mountain goats, moose, and most recently wolves. So I've been studying wolves for the past 4 years.
Oh, wow.
As well as the bear management, human-bear conflicts, that
sort
of stuff.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. We were just listening to That Sounds Wild from Riley Woodford, our friend of the Department of Fish and Game, and about electric fences, right?
Yes.
Like, and that's a big thing. So when you have, I guess that's like 25 years you've been studying bears.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's pretty amazing, yeah.
So I guess, I mean, we could talk for hours, but how do you sum up that experience? What do you think is like the journey that you've been on? What's been like the most rewarding thing about it?
Well, I think back to kayaking in Glacier Bay when I was probably like 27 and learning about bears for the first time because I'd moved to Alaska pretty recently. Mm. And I felt like there was a lot of misunderstandings. It just seemed like what I saw with bears didn't match what I read or heard about bears, the news, the stories, you know, the attack stories, all that. And what I experienced was very different. And I remember telling my friend, I just want to be like a bear-human translator.
Mm.
And it's funny because at that point I had no plan. I didn't even have my undergraduate degree, like nothing. And then somehow it happened. That's kind of what I do. And that is probably the most rewarding when I see people kind of get it that bears aren't the problem, that we, with some really pretty minor changes of behavior, can alleviate conflicts, whether it's because of garbage or trash or livestock, like Riley talks about, electric fences, or also how you behave during an encounter can make a huge difference in how that encounter goes. And so we can eliminate conflicts by the way we behave in an encounter, and the main way you do that is to get into the bear's head, try to understand what the bear wants and what it's doing, and it's a whole different encounter.
Yeah, because I feel like most of the time I would think that, I mean, I would probably, I'm speaking from my own experience, I guess, like if I was walking on a trail and I saw a giant bear, I think obviously you get instantly the fear, right?
Yeah.
The idea to
it's natural.
Get away and to run. And of course, I've heard all those stories. I've never had a bear encounter. Not that I want one. I'm not asking the universe for one. But like what you hear is like, don't move suddenly, don't run. Like, are all those things sort of true? Like you want to like take a pause and like you're saying, I didn't ever hear this though. Like think about what the bear, they're also probably surprised to see you.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Yep. Yeah, I think it's not as simple as do this, don't do this.
Yeah.
It's a matter of learning about bear behavior, and there's some really simple ways to do that. Fish and Game has great website information. National Park Service has great information. One of the best videos that you can watch on YouTube is called Staying Safe in Bear Country.
Mm.
Excellent, excellent safety information, but more than that, bear behavior information. So there's different types of encounters, and they're based on what that bear is doing and how that bear is perceiving you, whether it's seeing you as a threat or maybe just in the way, or maybe it's scared of you. And so there's different ways to react, or maybe it wants to get past you to get, say, some garbage, you know, like in downtown Juneau.
Yeah.
So all those are very different. But once you understand those basics, it's pretty straightforward of a couple different things you do to respond to those. And I guess the main one being if a bear displays very aggressive behavior, huffing, charging you, that sort of thing, it is seeing you as a threat. So it's scared of you, which is hard for people to really like get. But in that case, you want to talk very nicely to it and back away slowly and basically show the bear that you're not a threat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, contrast to a bear coming in your yard, coming to your house, you know, putting its paws on your doorway, which I think happens in Juneau, on your glass window, you know, that bear, it wants something, and that's the type of bear that you can yell at and haze off and try to get it to go.
When I used to live in North Douglas, you know, it was like banging pans to get them to go away and yelling at them and that kind of thing, because they're searching for something at that point, right?
Exactly.
So when you're on a walk, I want to go back to that walk thing real quick. I had a friend I used to take walks with, and she always had a bell like that would just be making noise. Is that a good thing to be doing when you're out there on the in the trails?
I find those very annoying, actually. I once watched a girl walk by with a bell, her bear bell's going, and she was reading a book. So she's absolutely not paying any attention around her, but she's like trusting in these bells to scare off anything scary, which is ridiculous because, you know, number one, you want to be paying attention. You want to be watching around, looking around. You want to avoid surprising bears. And number two, it's it is just distracting from the, you know, from the environment, from the natural sounds, the birds and all that. So I don't recommend bear bells. If you are going through areas where you can't see well, or visibility or acoustics, like a noisy river stream, you want to, you know, once in a while be calling out like, hello, singing a song, you know, making yourself known, because your voice will most often.
So you don't get into that surprised situation, right? When you turn a corner and something happens.
I think the most important thing for people to know is bears are scared of us usually. The number of bears that run that you don't see is probably staggering.
Really?
And people who do observations of people and bears say that, like, there's a bear in the grass 20 feet behind the group of people. They never see it. The bear goes the other way. Happens all the time.
Interesting.
And then there's all the encounters that are benign, that bears and people acknowledge each other and then, you know, move on. And then there's a few of these sort of more scary encounters or even attacks that get all the news.
Right, because that's what is, sensational news that happens. Now, recently I had on the show the Clinkett and Haida's culture ambassadors who work out at the glacier, and they're there to sort of, you know, talk about indigenous, the world of the, you know, indigenous peoples here on the land. But they were also talking about they're going to hire a safety ambassador this year who's going to be sort of looking around for the different things, because out there at Mendenhall, obviously there's the creeks and there's the water and there's the bears and the fish, right? And I'm just curious, like, if you have visitors coming to town and you want to take them out to Mendenhall, those who've lived here a long time probably know what to do. But is there any tips you would have for when you're going into, you know, a bear, known bear area?
Yeah. I mean, the basics, paying attention. You're always safer in groups. Groups are three or four, staying together is very helpful. Dogs can be a big problem. I know a lot of people are happy when their dogs chase off bears, but I think especially in a situation like at the Mendenhall where the bears are in their natural environment, I think it's not really fair to the bears. And I also think that, well, I know that there are instances where dogs chase bears and the bear turns around and chase dogs and sometimes hurt the dogs, but sometimes the dogs lead the bears right back to the people. So it can just be, it's a wild card in your encounter with a bear to have a dog.
Stay in groups. Shout out once in a while. No bear bells. I like that idea. Pay attention.
Pay attention.
I think that's
exactly
a big one. Pay attention to what's going on around you. And if you're in that environment, you're there for a reason, right?
Exactly.
Which is to enjoy that outdoors. So this talk tonight, Bears in Alaska, and are you relating it to Mary Roach's book, Fuzz? And tell me a little bit about what we're going to hear tonight.
Yeah, I give a lot of bear safety trainings all year. This one, I took a little different approach because to me, Mary Roach's book is about coexistence And so that's sort of the name of my talk tonight. And bears are the example, with some specific examples specific to Juneau and black bears and some of the problems here. But human-wildlife interactions are, span multiple species. And so I'll talk a little bit about some of the main ones here in Alaska, which include bats and wolves and moose and deer, I'm sure, here. And on Douglas, people have problems with conflicts with deer. And similar to Mary Roach's book, it's sort of this idea that can we coexist as human populations increase and wildlife populations decrease? How can we coexist to better serve both or all species? How can we get along with these animals as we continue to encroach on wild spaces on Earth?
Interesting. That sounds really fun. That's tonight at 6 o'clock at the Valley Library.
Correct.
And it's free.
Free.
As
always.
Most everything in the Juneau Library system is, right. Which is great. And what is your hope for your future work, Tanya? What would you like to see? You're talking about this coexistence and as we're encroaching on land and everything. Let's say 10 years down the line, what do you hope for wildlife?
That's a great question. I like that. I think this idea of coexistence and teaching people how to make subtle changes in their behavior that can affect wildlife, whether it's encounters or attractants or excluding animals from your house in a non-lethal way. I think that that's where we need to go, and I hope that I can help with that teaching, that translation, I guess, between people and wildlife of how to get along so that fewer animals get killed.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for being here and telling us all of that. Where can we follow you and your work in the future? You have an Instagram or something?
I have a website with the National Park Service. If you Google Glacier Bay National Park, Tanya Lewis, you will probably come up with my bio page, and that links to publications and project sort of research highlights that I make for projects I'm working on and
doing
that sort of thing.
Doing different things. Awesome.
Yeah. And
that's
my email.
Cool. And your email's on there too, so people can reach out. And it's Tanya, TANIA.
Correct.
Yeah, so
yep.
when you're putting that in your favorite search engine, you want to make sure you type that name in there correctly. What an awesome project. What an awesome thing Juneau Reads is doing and bringing people like Tanya to town to talk about bears.
Yeah, thank you, Jen.
Yeah,
I really appreciate the invitation.
It's been so much fun to kind of figure out how to get people in the community connected through a book and relating it to their own lives. And so I'm excited to get the ball rolling with this first presentation and then keep that conversation going for another couple months.
That's fantastic. Well, Gunachis, for being here. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Tongass Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative offering checking and savings accounts, loans, and digital financial services. In Juneau at 8585 Old Dairy Road in the K Plaza and at tongassfcu.com, federally insured by NCUA.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. For decades, Diana Borges and her husband Dwight have given tourists a unique way to experience Lake Tahoe in winter, horse-drawn sleigh rides.
I like to tell people that Lake Tahoe is probably one of the most beautiful places this side of heaven.
As they glide through Nevada's Sand Harbor State Park, riders admire shimmering blue water, pristine beaches, and snow-topped mountain peaks. And they hear stories, poems, and songs.
So we usually start off with a little jingle. It's beautiful weather for a sleigh ride together with you.
Borges' father-in-law started the family business in 1967. And she says to keep it going this long, they've had to adapt.
As the climate has changed over the decades and the snow is not as consistent as it used to be, we started to put little wheels underneath our sleighs.
That allows them to roll along the trails when there's not enough snow to glide on the runners, so the Borges family can continue operating even as the climate warms. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
Put your roots down, put your feet on the ground. You can hear what she says if you listen. Put your roots down, put your feet on the ground. You can hear what she says. Put your roots down, put your feet on the ground. You can hear what she says if you listen. Put your roots down, put your feet on the ground. You can hear what she says. Are you listening? Are you listening? Put your roots down, put your feet on the ground. You can hear what she says if you listen. Put your roots down, put your feet on the ground. You can hear what she says if you listen. Put your roots down, put your feet on the ground. You can hear what she says.
That's Luna and Ursus from a few years ago here when they were here for the Folk Fest. Put Your Roots Down, fantastic song. They played live here on the red carpet stage in Studio 2K at KTOO during Juno Afternoon, which is what you're listening to right now. I'm Boston Christopher. And next Wednesday, the UAS Career Services is hosting two events where you can put your roots down. It's Tuesday, February 25th. It's the Spring Career Fair and a networking dinner. So it's not just a daytime event. It's a day and evening event, and you can spend the whole day out there figuring out what you want to do with your life, figuring out what you want to do next with your life, or just do some investigation into what the possibilities are out there in the world. And joining me now in the studio to talk more about these events is Story Oates from the UAS Career Services. Sheesh, how are you? I'll see you, T.
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm so excited to talk about the career fair and the networking dinner.
Yeah, absolutely. First, though, I have to ask you, your name is awesome. So can you tell me about your name, Story Oates?
Thank you. That name, my dad gave me that name, okay. Story. He is a very creative individual. My whole family thought he was a little bit crazy. And so my mom got to choose my middle name just in case I didn't like Story. I never not liked my name.
Let me guess. Is your middle name like Anne or something simple like that?
Christine.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's nice. And did you know, did he ever tell you where he got the name from?
He's a retired dentist, okay. And he had a patient with the name spelled a little differently, but it's kind of funny because I ended up marrying, my husband is a storyteller. Mm-hmm. I, through my previous work, have done a lot of, storytelling, mm-hmm. and through education and outreach, and it just somehow, I don't know if I lived up to the name or
it manifested somehow.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's spelled Stori.
Correct.
Yeah. So it's Story Oates, which is just a fantastic name.
Thank
I was like,
you.
That's a great name. So how did you get into career services?
That's a fantastic question. It's kind of funny. I never saw myself in career services or doing career counseling. My background's in marine biology.
I know. I noticed that on your bio. I was like, she's a marine biologist.
Yes.
How'd she get into this?
Yeah, I have a master's in marine science. I've studied marine mammals, seabirds, sea turtles, fish, basically anything with a backbone. I was really interested in it. I'm very curious about the outdoor world. But it's hard to find jobs as a scientist, especially when I was living in California. And my husband and I, 5 years ago, made the decision to move up to Juneau to hopefully find another, for me to get back into marine science. And I did work at NOAA out at Lena Point as the education outdoor coordinator. Outreach coordinator. So I worked with Sea Week. So I ran Sea Week for the last 5 years.
Okay.
Worked a lot with students actually at UAS. And so I got to know the former career services manager, Amy Richards, and when she was leaving, she reached out to me and said, hey, would you be interested? And I said, yes, I'd be very interested, because a lot of what I love to do is, you know, combine that passion of the curiosity and science and just wanting to know more with how does that translate to a job?
Yeah.
A lot of the students I was working with are, you know, looking for internships, looking for positions, and it was really fun to work with students to develop new initiatives, new opportunities, and to see them kind of, you know, take the next step. So, you know, I kind of did a lot of work as a scientist, but it's great to see the next generation stepping into that.
Yeah.
And now in this position, I get to work with students that are in accounting and science and environmental science and art. And it's just, it's really fun for me because I'm constantly learning as well.
Yeah, that's what I love about my job is I get to learn about all these different things from all the wonderful people that live here in our community. And something I noticed too in your bio and stuff is the idea of, you talked about the braided river and how that, I hadn't heard of this before, but replacing the traditional leaky pipeline model for STEM careers, which assumes a linear path from education to jobs with a braided river analogy, which I'm imagining if you're into this, it's great in the new work that you're doing here in the career services. But can you tell me about this braided river analogy?
Absolutely. So this was a paper, this was based on an idea published by a group of people. The paper was led by, it was Beecher 2021. So it was really about how do we get non-traditional students into the workforce?
Yeah.
So whether, I mean, because for so long the pipeline has been, you know, graduate from high school, go to college for 4 years, get out, get a job, and go on with your life.
Yeah.
That's not reality.
Right.
Especially now. And so the braided river really has multiple avenues to get into fields such as STEM, so science, engineering, technology, math, arts. But oftentimes,
We got to get the A in
there. We have to get the STEAM, really. We have to have the A.
And it's a better analogy. It's really a better like word for it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
yes. Yeah, so for STEAM, but this way, you know, whether you're going to community college or you're going back for a second career, wherever you might be, or maybe you're right out of high school and looking for opportunities, there should be a path for everyone. And so to really bring people in, so that braided river, I really like that better than the pipeline, because part of my work when I was at NOAA was figuring out how do we get non-traditional students into these types of internships, which have been really for that traditional student going to the four-year college. And, you know, with a GPA of over 3.0, which, honestly, I was a terrible student.
Me too.
I loved learning, but school was not my thing.
Right,
I really learned by doing. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get out in the field. I wanted to get hands-on. And if you're looking at only a GPA, that cuts out so many of talented and really great job applicants, potentially.
And it's one of those things where when you see job job postings, you know, and they say, 5 years of background in XYZ thing and 3 years of knowledge of whatever this thing is. And I remember learning years ago the idea of transferable skills and how to talk about that when you're maybe trying to do a career switch. Let's say you're trying to get into something else. And what can you take from the work you've been doing that is a skill that would be eligible to be used in this new job, and try to then talk about it that way in your application letter so that they don't just instantly, you know, write you off, you know, because I think a lot of people get turned off by when they see a job application and they say, you need 5 years experience in whatever that field is. And you're like, how do I get experience if I can't get a job? You know, the old catch 22, right?
Yeah. No, absolutely. That's a great point. And that's something that I actually just came here from the tech center. So I was meeting with a group with a class talking about resumes and talking about those transferable skills and how do you incorporate those into your resume or cover letter so an employer can see that, you know, for example, so if you're a student and you're looking for maybe field biology, but you've never had the opportunity to actually do it, well, how do you get across that you're hardworking, that you're willing, you're adaptable, you're flexible, you know, you're willing to do what it takes to be out in the field if you don't actually have the job, right?
Right.
And that's where I will work with students to think about, what volunteer experience have you done? What have you done in your classes that might help you? What other jobs that you have that would demonstrate those transferable skills?
Right.
So the example I love to use is, if I was looking at two resumes for a field biologist, and you know, they could list all their experience, but one had a barista or had worked as a babysitter, I would see that, and as an employer, I would probably go for the person who had a barista, like that experience as a barista or a babysitter, because one, if you're a barista, you've worked in a fast-paced environment.
Mm-hmm.
You've had to multitask.
Mm-hmm.
You've had to, you know, work with customers, so customer service, maybe working with customers that may not be happy, so you've had to do conflict resolution. All of those things, you know, they're not – have nothing to do with biology, but – that means everything in the field when maybe you're with two or three people and you're in a kind of a high-pressure environment. And so making sure that you're somehow getting those skills into your resume, even if you don't think they apply, those transferable skills are key.
Yeah, the skills and the talents, you know, that's what's so fascinating. So this spring career fair next week, I had the flyer up here on the stream. It's from 11 to 2 p.m. next Wednesday, February 25th. It's out at the Egan Library, and it is packed with people. You've said that you have so many employers that are going to be there.
We are sold out. We have employers on the wait list. Unfortunately, we couldn't have everyone because of the space, but we have 52 outside employers from Juneau and across Alaska. There's a couple from the lower 48. And we also have four tables that are UAS focused. So we have, if you're looking for an on-campus job at UAS, we have a couple of tables with information. And then we also have our Ketchikan folks, our advisors coming up, and they're joining, as well as our behavioral health, health sciences, and medical assisting program to just be able to get there and give out information.
And I want to be clear on this. It's not just for students.
Correct. It is not just for students. So this is for students, alumni, community members. It's open to everyone.
Open to the public.
Yeah, it's open to the public. We will have snacks. Spike will be there for the first hour to welcome everyone. It's going to be really fun.
Yeah, that sounds really fun. What kind of range of employers do you have?
We have mining companies. We have biology, environmental science. We have education. We have city, state, federal employers. So.
Yeah.
There is something for everyone, whether you're an accounting major or, you haven't declared a major yet, or maybe you're doing an occupational endorsement. There is something for everyone at the career fair.
And you can go to career.uas.alaska.edu. /career-fair, but just put in the UAS Spring Career Fair into your favorite search engine and the link will pop up, because sometimes links can get a little long.
Yes.
I'm sure it's also on the UAS Facebook page and things like that.
It's on Facebook, on Instagram, and that actually brings up a great point because we have a lot of students and community members that maybe not be able to join us in person.
Mm.
We have a lot of online students. We have our campuses in Sitka and Ketchikan, and so we're going to be doing an Instagram Live takeover.
Oh.
So we will have our Alaska fellow, Elaine Liu, walking around the career fair, taking questions from audience members who are joining on Instagram Live. And so she can walk up to an employer and ask the question in real time.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So if you follow us at UA Southeast, that's our handle. So you can join starting at 11 o'clock. We'll go to 2 o'clock. And Elaine will just be walking around chatting with employers. And you can ask questions.
I love that. And then this networking dinner, is this a new addition?
Sort of. So we've done networking dinners. This is really an initiative that was started with our alumni association. So we have partnered with them. We've done two networking dinners. One was in 2024. We had another one in the fall of 2025, so in September. This one we wanted to add on because we have so many employers that we thought, let's do an event the night of because employees are already in town.
Right.
The students and everyone, you know, we've been promoting the career fair. Let's make another opportunity and focus on the tourism industry and seasonal part-time jobs. And right now we have – I had to – unfortunately, we have 11 employers, and I had to cut off registration because we're limited in with our space.
Mm.
So this is going to be in the Glacier View Room. So we have, you know, we have to limit how many we can get, about 55 people in there. So
I see. And as a person who may be coming, wanting to go to that, are those tickets still available, or is it free?
Yes.
Or how does that work?
It's free. So if you're interested in attending, you can go onto our website. So career.uas.alaska.edu and click on the banner. There's a big career fair banner, and there's a little star there that talks about the networking dinner. If you click on that, there is a button that you can then register as an attendee, and it's free. There will be food, beverages, and plenty of people to talk to and network with.
Is the fact that you have sold out all the booths and you have maxed out your employers for the networking dinner, obviously people can, students and community members can go and meet all these folks. That's not, part isn't sold out. But is that a sign that, like, employers are hungry for people?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. All the employers that are attending are there because they want to hire. And so I'm recommending to students to bring a resume. Bring something you can hand an employer, a business card, a resume, something, because there's a possibility you could get hired on the spot.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
It
I mean,
is.
I think that's good for the job market, I guess. Yeah.
It is.
And
it
that's
is.
The thing, because not everybody, and this goes back to where we started, and then we'll have to end for the day, but the idea that you have the skills that may not fit that particular, job market, but they may not have the people they need who have the degree in engineering, let's say, and so they need somebody else who has those transferable skills, and that could be you.
Right, exactly. And a lot of employers will train on the job.
Yeah.
Right? So if you can just show up and be enthusiastic and be willing to learn, they're willing to train you.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Story Oates, thank you so much.
Thank you
for being here. It's the Career Fair, the Spring Career Fair. It's next Wednesday from 11 to 2 p.m. out at the Egan Library at the UAS campus. There's also a networking dinner in the Glacier View Room from 5:30 to 7 p.m. Make a day of it. Go explore the job market. Go to career.uas.alaska.edu for more information. Thank you so much, Story. Gunathish.
Thank you.
That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, we preview the new theatrical production, Pueblo Revolt, opening next week at Perseverance Theater. And we chat with Dr. Hune Lance Twitchell about the new Master of Arts in Teaching Indigenous Language degree coming to UAS. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO and KAUK. You can find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon. You can find live stream archives on KTOO's YouTube page. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Programming support for Juno Afternoon comes from listeners and viewers like you and Country Financial, Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Tongass Federal Credit Union. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program with help today from Aaron Tripp. Good cheese.
You're listening to KTOO 104.3 Juno and KAUK 91.7 Juno, Auk Bay.